Happy June, Duke fans. Welcome to episode 518 of the Duke Basketball Roundup. I'm Jason Evans, here for your listening pleasure. We're going to be talking a little bit about the upcoming sophomore seasons that we expect from some of the Dukies on our squad for next year, who we are hoping going to have very, very good sophomore seasons. Before we get to that, we got some news, some stuff that's happened in the past couple of days regarding recruiting and regarding a beloved former Dukie. Joining me to talk about all of it is Donald Wine and Sam Klein. Sam, how you feeling today?
Not camping anymore. So much better rested than I think the last time we spoke, and of much clearer head. So that's great. And looking forward to talking a little bit about sophomore seasons. You got me, Jason. I'll tell the people before we get to that topic that you got me really jazzed up to discuss this one. And I just want to say before we get into college basketball news or Duke news that, guys, I think Nikola Jokic, good basketball player.
I got out on a limb there.
He's okay.
Huh?
Turns out. Yeah. I don't know if I could call them my Denver Nuggets, former Denver resident. My Denver Nuggets just absolutely pasted the Heat the other night. So, man, really good.
Yeah. I would make them the favorite to hoist the trophy at the end of the season. I'm not going out on a limb there to say that.
Donald, that Watt, is a hot take.
Yeah, exactly. We make hot takes here. That is not a hot take. Donald Wine, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I just want to shout out a few of the non-Duke basketball sports that are out there right now. Duke softball got to the Super Regionals, a very fantastic season for them. Duke men's lacrosse got to the title game. Unfortunately, they lost in the title game, but had a very, very strong season. Duke baseball starts this weekend in the NCAA tournament. They've been doing well this season. Duke sevens at the soccer tournament out in Raleigh, they just won. We're doing a bunch of stuff. The K Academies this weekend. Like, I love the fact that there's just so many random things going on that are Duke related or Duke ancillary that we can talk about. But I also enjoy the fact that we do have some basketball news in the first weekend of June to discuss.
Yeah, and actually, I want to follow up on one thing you mentioned, the K Academy that is going on right now. It is worth noting that all four of the incoming freshmen for Duke are on campus for this. They are taking part in K Academy. I don't even want to say it was a rumor, but there were some Duke fans out there in the universe who were, over the course of the past few weeks, a little bit worried maybe when Jeremy Roach announced he was returning to Duke. There were some people out there who were like, ooh, I wonder if, one of the Duke guard recruits is going to be worried about playing time or something like that. I think you can now put any of those worries completely to bed because all these guys are officially on campus. They haven't enrolled in classes. Or I guess they've enrolled. They haven't started taking classes in the summer session. They'll probably start doing that in just a couple of weeks. But I think at this point, we know what the roster is going to be for the Duke Blue Devils next year. It is worth noting, we've talked on this podcast about Ernest Uday. He went ahead and committed to TCU. He is not going to be attending Duke. We spoke about that a little bit on the past couple of podcasts. I think we now know all the players who will be in a Duke uniform next year.
One observation from the images from K Academy. I initially thought when I saw the pictures the other day that Tyrese Proctor had cut his hair. It looks like he's just braided it. So I think it's just down and waiting to be returned to its illustrious state. So
hey, it's not, the summertime.
This is the time to
experiment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everyone can do the weird Paolo Banchero, Wendell Carter hair thing. As long as you come back sometime.
Speaking from a
place of knowledge on this, as someone who has a ton of hair on top of his head.
Also, real quick, again, another side note, Duke football, all the freshmen are on campus this weekend as well. They're starting to move in. So it's becoming that time where, Jason, hopefully in a few weeks, we start to get some of these, super top double secret probation type of, workout videos that we like to get during the summer.
Oh, the other fun stuff.
The other fun image from K Academy that I like, there were a lot of great pictures. So I don't know why you wouldn't be following Duke men's basketball on social media at this point. But I liked the picture of Coach K sitting with Danny Ferry and Quinn Snyder, just, like the execs off to the side, sort of doing their own thing. They can't be bothered to be like on the court anymore. You know, those are they're front office guys. They're not on the court guys.
I'd love to go to Kate Academy just once. So if you are trying to sponsor three guys who probably can't play basketball as well as they did in their good days, dbrpodcast@gmail.com. We'll do whatever you need us to do. But next year, it'd be nice to try and do this, or it didn't even have to be next year, but once. I'll even train for it.
I would go just to hang. No one wants to see me play basketball. I don't want to see me play basketball. And frankly, like, I don't want to play basketball. But if someone wants to sponsor me just to go and hang and talk to people, I'm game for that.
I will freely admit that as I was looking at the photo, the big class photo, which is all the recruits, all the players, all the former players, the Coach K, all the coaches, and then all the guys who are there at K Academy, you can tell there's a difference. There are a bunch of guys who look like us, short, unathletic, and then there are a bunch of tall, super athletic looking guys. Yeah, there's a huge difference. By the way, the thing I noticed in the K Academy photo, the big class photo, like I said, that looked like it had 100 plus people in it, was that Coach K was right there, front and center, in the very middle, and standing right next to him, literally, place of honor, was friend of the podcast, Kenny Denard. The dog was there, like, literally right next to Kay. No one had a better, you know, angle in that photo than Kenny Denard. Kenny knows, he plays the PR game beautifully.
I feel like he's got seniority rights, too. He can just be like, yeah, look here. Class, you know, I was on the 78 team. Move. Like, you
right.
can do that.
I've known this guy longer than anybody else. K Academy, I've known longer than anybody else. Exactly. All right, guys.
To the Final Four before many of you were born.
Yeah, exactly. Even some of the guys who are attending K Academy, paying to be there, were not born when Kenny Denard went to the Final Four. All right, gentlemen, let's get to a little bit of news that we have that we wanted to talk about. First thing first, Wojo on the move. Actually, not really on the move. He's on the move in terms of job, but not in terms of cities. Apparently, Wojo has been living for the past couple of years in the Salt Lake City area, and he has now been hired to coach. He is the new head coach of the Salt Lake City Stars. They are the Utah Jazz's G League affiliate. Wojo has been wanting to get into the pro basketball game for the past couple of years. He obviously, you know, was connected and knows Quinn Snyder very well. Quinn has been unbelievably successful in pro basketball. Coached the Utah Jazz for several seasons, is now the coach of my Atlanta Hawks. Anyway, Wojo making his move into the pro basketball game as the head coach of the G League affiliate of the Utah Jazz, the Salt Lake City Stars. Utah's apparently very encouraged and excited about his ability to teach those guys. That is the primary job of a G League coach. More than winning, it is developing players. Donald, what's your feelings about Wojo getting to this spot?
I think it's a great move because I think a lot of people don't realize that the G League path is actually a pretty viable path when it comes to showcasing yourself as a coach, not just to, you know, the college ranks, but also to the NBA. Jason, you just mentioned Quinn Snyder. Quinn Snyder is a guy who, when he left Missouri, he ended up coaching in the G League for three seasons with the Austin Toros. Then from there, got an NBA assistant job, moved from there, and then he became the Utah Jazz coach for eight seasons before, like you said, now he's with the Hawks. So this is the path that he can, you know, use to kind of showcase himself as well. And also, again, show that he can work with developing young players, because a lot of these players in the G League are guys trying to make it to the next level, trying to make it to the NBA and get that shot. So he's a guy that, you know, if he's teaching and developing these guys to get them to a point where they're ready to play for the Utah Jazz or for any other team, then he's going to get some looks as well for an NBA staff. And as we've seen in this offseason, these NBA coaching staffs turn over quite frequently and they're very volatile. So the coaching carousel, he can join that if he does well here. So I wish him the best of luck. This is a great move for him.
Two thoughts on this. One, related to what Donald was talking about, that it seems like a lot of NBA teams are taking more flyers in recent years on newer or younger head coaches. We see a number of them going deep in the playoffs now, guys who are like only in their 30s and 40s. It turns out like you don't need George Karl and Greg Popovich and all these older coaches everywhere. There's lots of younger coaches who are getting big opportunities in the NBA. So to Donald's point, wouldn't be surprised if, you know, if Wojo does a great job in Salt Lake City, that either he you know, like, I don't know if he would ever, if he would get called up specifically for Utah or if there are other jobs out there for him. So definitely feels like there's a path. The other thing that I was thinking about when I saw this news is that I would think that Wojo is coming into this with a pretty clear head about what the opportunity looks like. One, because he was at Duke, where you're obviously coaching, you know, future NBA players everywhere. Marquette, he oversaw the development of a number of guys who are now in the NBA. And I think most importantly, he has his experience as an assistant with Team USA, both under Coach K and later, that I think probably give him the best exposure to what it looks like working with the highest level guys who are really there to like learn and develop and not just be college students. Cause being a college coach is very different from being a professional coach in a lot of ways. So hopefully that means that he's, you know, in here eyes wide open about what the differences are. I think for some guys who have been coaching in the college game, like Wojo has for the better part of 20 years, you could imagine the transition actually being somewhat difficult because you don't have the same control over the program in the NBA that you do in college, but no recruiting. You don't have to deal with boosters. You don't have to deal with a lot of the other nonsense. You are just there to coach basketball. And if Wojo had fun doing that with Team USA, I imagine it will be satisfied and successful as a pro coach.
And from a Duke perspective, in terms of the brotherhood and the guys that are currently on this roster or future rosters, having someone, we always talk about the guys that we know that they're in the NBA, but having someone in the G League is just as beneficial. We just talked about the fact that, you know, over the course of the last couple of weeks, we've seen not just an NBA draft combine, but a G League draft combine. And so you have those guys and him being able to tell you, hey, here's what you need to do to get to at least the G League level. And also what you need to do to strive to get to that next level and how the G League can help you. This is a great way. Again, another way for these players to get the information that they need to make the most informed decisions.
Another Duke guy who is on his way to sort of NBA front office potentially, right? I mean, being a coach on the court is a little different than being the general manager, but we mentioned a few minutes ago about guys like Danny Ferry, Quinn Snyder, Elton Brand, Trajan Langdon. Duke's had a lot of recent guys who have taken executive roles, and this could
Mike
also
Dunleavy
be
might
that.
Be,
Mike Dunleavy, yeah, exactly.
Might so, be added to that version. Yeah.
The league continues to be littered with Duke alumni who are in all kinds of coaching and front office roles, and this seems like a cool move for Wojo. And frankly, you know, we saw how it went at Marquette for him. Only okay. This might be an indicator that, like, the interest in him getting another, you know, relatively premier college job might not have been available. We don't know that there's, I don't think there's any reporting about it, but if this is a way for him to jumpstart his coaching career, it seems like a cool move. And I guess he's already living, like you said, Jason, in Salt Lake City. I don't know why, but there we are. So a cool move for him.
All right, gentlemen, let's move on to the next topic we want to get to, and that is recruiting. Duke put out another offer in the class of 2024, and you know, I mentioned at the top of this podcast that Ernest Uday is not going to be coming to Duke. And as a result, it looks like Duke has turned their attention to a big man in the class of 2024. If we'd gotten Uday, I think Duke expected he would be there for multiple years and we maybe wouldn't have needed a big in the class of 2024. Well, now it turns out we perhaps do. And Duke has made an offer to Patrick, I'm gonna probably butcher his last name, Gongba, I believe is how his last name is pronounced. Now, Patrick has a lot of connections to 2024 Duke commit Darren Harris. So Patrick plays for Paul VI, one of the elite, if not the best, high school basketball programs out there in the country. So does Darren Harris. Patrick also plays on Team Takeover in the AAU world. Team Takeover has been the best team, the best record of any team at the AAU EYBL sessions that have been going on recently. And his teammate on that EYBL team is none other than Darren Harris. These guys clearly know each other really well. I have to wonder if Darren Harris perhaps was getting in the ear of the Duke coaches and saying, hey, you should really check out Patrick. Patrick's worth looking at. And here, let me tell you something very interesting about Patrick Ngongba. At the EYBL, he was playing fine, you know, but he wasn't really lighting it up that much. He wasn't having people talk about him all that much. And then over this past weekend. If you're wondering why Duke made an offer, it may be this. I'm going to tell you what Patrick did in his last three EYBL games over the weekend. He had 18 points and 11 rebounds and 3 blocks in the first game. He had 33 points, 18 rebounds in the next game. Again, 33 points and 18 rebounds. He had 5 assists in that game as well. And then in the final game for Team Takeover, he had 16 points, 9 rebounds, and 3 more block shots. By the way, he has been unveiling a 3-point shot lately. In each of those games, the 6'10 center who protects the rim went out to the perimeter and hit 3-pointers. In fact, over the weekend, he was 4 of 5 on 3-point shots at the EYBL. Dude apparently can shoot from the outside. He can protect the rim. He's grabbing rebounds to the tune of 11, 18, and 9 per game. Very, very impressive stuff from Patrick Ngongba. And he has received a Duke offer. Donald, any thoughts on this potential recruit?
Yeah, first off, Jason, I hate to say this, but you mispronounced his name after those stats that I heard.
I think it's
Patrick Njokic, I think is what we were talking about here, because he has a Nikola Jokic kind of game if he's going to be doing 33-18 and shooting 3-pointers, so and dishing out 5 assists. So I really, first of all, I live here in D.C. I need to get some PVI games, it seems like, next year to talk to both of these two. But I'm really looking forward to seeing how he develops, because it seems like, from what I've seen him, through his play, at least last year on the, when he was playing for PVI, he still has game to develop, right? Like, you talked about some of the things he did well, but he still has room to improve in so many areas before he gets to college. So this could be, a very, very nice piece to the class of 2024. When you keep in mind, we have Darren Harris. I'm blanking on the other guy that we got.
Isaiah Evans.
And then if we could get Cooper Flagg and he reclassifies, just wrap it up. 2024 sounds like another cool class coming in if we add him to the mix.
Yeah, and Duke is still after. I think the number one guy that Duke is still after in that class is Dylan Harper, considered one of the top 1, 2, 3 players in that class, a combo guard, the son of the former NBA great Ron Harper. And he's still very much high on Duke and on the radar of John Shire. But yeah, that class is shaping up to be a very, very interesting one for the Blue Devils.
The other thing about Paul the Sixth that I know we've talked about before, but I don't know that we mentioned it here, is that Duke has had a lot of success recently with Paul the Sixth alumni. Both Jeremy Roach and Trevor Keels are PVI grads. So this is a great pipeline. This is sort of like how a few years ago Duke had a pretty strong Oak Hill pipeline. They've done this with a few programs over the years.
And just the DC pipeline in general.
Yeah,
like the number of guys coming out of DC over the last decade has been, Jason, you've said it and I've said it on this podcast. It's, that league is probably the best high school league in the country. And we're being very successful at grabbing guys out of that, out of those leagues.
Yeah, Donald, you definitely need to go to a PVI game. PVI, by the way, also has a guy named Isaiah Abraham, who is Patrick Gongba's cousin or something like that. And they've talked about potentially playing together. Isaiah Abraham is a top 75 kind of recruit. I don't think he makes sense for Duke because we have Isaiah Evans already and they kind of play the same position. So he doesn't really fit, but that's basically three, top 50, top 75 guys playing in the same high school. Wow. I mean, PVI is ridiculous.
Isaiah Abraham's nickname is not the forefather, then I don't think I can watch basketball anymore.
I love it.
I know a place where he could be named that. Cam and Crazy, they're good at coming up with stuff like that, and we don't have to come up with it. We just gave it to him.
There you go. That's my contribution. I'm done. But one other note on Ngongba that I just wanted to sort of observe is when I look at his recruiting ranking right now. 247 says that he's the 64th best recruit in the country. He's currently listed as a 4-star. I imagine that's an old number, and that updated rankings will reflect a much better ranking for him. Looking at his offer list, Duke is obviously going to be one of the 3 or 4 crown jewels of any high school basketball player's offer list. But he's got a pretty long list already of top programs with others that seem to be interested and just waiting to offer. So this is a guy who is primed for the Duke bump in his recruiting ranking. And Yeah, it does feel like there's a very clear spot for him next year. Like you were saying, Jason, if Duke doesn't have a dominant center on this team, Ryan Young will leave at the end of next year because he'll be out of eligibility. And Ngongba, I guess, technically would be competing with Christian Reeves, but if he's a real both ends of the floor top tier center like this, then he should have no problem getting minutes anywhere. So definitely an exciting guy. And yeah, Donald, I'm looking forward to the reports live from Fairfax next year.
Yeah, Donald, we got to get you over there. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back from the break, we were talking about this at the top. Be ready. I'm about to give you the top 10 sophomore seasons in Duke history. And we're going to talk a little bit about whether some of the guys who are upcoming sophomores at Duke, whether they may be primed to jump into that list of the top 10 sophomores in Duke Blue Devil basketball history. That's coming at you in just a moment. All right, guys. So I just want to tell everyone how we came up with this idea. It's my idea. I'm going to go ahead and take the credit for this one. It may be a good idea, maybe a bad idea. I don't know.
That was, JC, you had to be like, oh, yeah, you know, we had to come up with a story. You're just like, let me tell you how we did this. I did it.
I'm not going to take credit for Jason doing the homework here.
Yeah, right. Here's what I was thinking. We are all excited. Everyone is talking about Duke as a, you know, national championship potential team next year. We're excited because Duke is bringing back four starters. But we're really excited because we're bringing back three guys who each considered the NBA draft as they're out of their freshman year. And these three potential one and done players all decided to return for their sophomore season. Obviously, we're talking about Flip, Proctor, and Mitchell. And it got me to thinking. I was like, wow, sophomore seasons. I wonder who's like the best sophomore ever at Duke. And I want to be clear. I'm not talking about, you know, who went on to maybe have the best season later on in their career. You know, if we're talking about the best seniors, then we'd start talking about, oh, we're talking about Danny Ferry and Christian Laettner and Shane Battier, on and on. I can, you know, it's a long list of the best seniors. I'm talking about the best sophomore seasons. And I went ahead and ranked them 1 to 10. And I'm going to go through my rankings. And I'll get Donald and Sam to react to each one of them, or wherever you guys want to jump in, we can. But I looked all the way back to, this is basically the modern era. You know, we're going to start, you know, right around the time the NCAA tournament started expanding, right around the time there started to be at-large bids, that kind of stuff, in the late 1970s. That's how far back I looked. And I looked at every single sophomore season there was out there for a Duke player. So I don't think I missed anybody. I'm going to start by saying this. There are four guys who, man, I came really close. I considered every one of these guys for the for my number 10 slot. And I'll tell you who I ended up picking in just a moment. But the guys who just barely missed the top 10 are Kyle Singler, Johnny Dawkins, and Grant Hill. Kyle Singler was a second-team All-ACC player. So was Johnny Dawkins. Grant Hill was also second-team All-ACC. They each had excellent years, but the guy I went with as the number 10, the 10th best sophomore season in Duke history, I put J.J. Redick, 15.9 points per game. He hit almost 40% of his three-pointers. He hit 95.3% of his free throws. That's a ridiculous number. 95% of your free throws is just a crazy, silly number. And J.J. Redick was second-team All-ACC. I think that J.J. Redick's sophomore season was the 10th best sophomore year of anyone in Duke history.
Jason, you were talking about the free throws, his sophomore year was my senior year, so I was here for this. This is where he missed, I think he went like 69 straight free throws made, and then when he missed, like, Cameron gasped. It was like how do we react to that? And there was a point during the season where he literally came to the crazies and said, hey, it's actually too quiet in Cameron when I shoot these free throws and it breaks my concentration. So can I get some ancillary like clapping noises? And so we would just lightly clap, you know, every, you know, Cameron's usually, you know, fever pitch loud, except for when a Duke player shooting free throws. But for JJ, we would do just light clapping just to get enough of a break in the silence that he could, you know, kind of concentrate through it. And it was mainly because on the road, he was getting so like, you know, getting just hammered by every opposing fan imaginable, that when he came home, he was like, I need that. You know, I need that kind of sound in my life. So it's very funny that him getting a career high based on the fact that he needed just a little bit of noise in Cameron to shoot those free throws.
I know I've told this story before, but there was a game where DeMarcus Nelson was like having trouble hitting his free throws, and the Cameron Crazies did the same thing. We like started clapping for him. It was during his senior year, because I remember being there. And like, so everyone else got the silent treatment, but when DeMarcus Nelson would shoot free throws, he'd be like, all right, D-Mark, like, come on. And then I guess he started making free throws. I'd have to go back and check what game it was. But anyway, let's get to the main list here.
Yeah. Okay. So like I said, the guy who comes in as my number 10 is JJ Redick. Number 9 is Matthew Hurt. And Matthew Hurt was a first team all ACC player. And you'll notice as I go down this list, almost everyone who makes my list of the top 10 sophomore seasons in Duke history is a guy who is a first-team All-ACC player. Matthew Hurt, as a sophomore, averaged 18.3 points per game, 6.2 rebounds per game. Get ready for the big number. 44% of his three-pointers? Man, I think that maybe, you know, we downgrade Matthew Hurt a little bit. He obviously has not gone on to have a career in the NBA. That Duke team struggled a very good bit. Wasn't the team that many people thought it could be. But that season Matthew Hurt had, especially at the offensive end of the floor, was really special. I come in with him as my number 9 among all sophomore seasons. Number 8 is Christian Laettner. And look, I know what Christian would go on to become, but what we really discovered in that sophomore season for Christian was what he could do, because his freshman year was good, but it didn't preview anything of what he would eventually go on to be. He averaged 16.5 points per game, almost 10 rebounds per game, 9.6. That ended up being Christian's career high in rebounds was his sophomore year. Hit 84% of his free throws, another career high. And he was second team All-ACC. You know, he was laying the groundwork of what would later be the greatest career in Duke history. I got Christian at number 8.
You know, it's interesting that you have Laettner and Matthew Hurt near each other. Not exactly the same player. Christian Laettner was more of an interior player, and Matthew Hurt was more of a perimeter player, but kind of similarly sized. And the fact that Matthew Hurt went on to not, as you said, have a great NBA career makes me really wish that he had come back for another season. Not to mention that his sophomore year ended so frustratingly for the team. So that was one, like, when we're looking through this list, one of the things that's cool is to see, you know, how much guys really took off in their sophomore years, and then how that, you know, for guys like JJ Redick or Christian Laettner, led them to not only Duke greatness, but being really good NBA players as well. And it's just a shame that that didn't happen for Matthew Hurt. Kind of wish he had stuck around and maybe developed a little more before making the leap.
All right, we get to number 7 on my list. It is Trajan Langdon. He was a first-team All-ACC player. Duke went 12-4 that year. And the reason I put Trajan Langdon at this elevated spot at number 7 was that season that they had, where they went 12-4, was really Duke returning to prominence in the ACC. I'm sure folks remember Coach K hurt his back. The team was down for a couple years. And then really on the back of Trajan Langdon and his scoring, he averaged better than 14 points per game that year, hit better than 44% of his three-pointers, hit almost 90% of his free throws. Behind that season from Trajan Langdon, his sophomore year, Duke returned to being the top of the ACC. And that's a big transition. Things could have, you know, not gone as great as they did, and Trajan was a huge part of that. So he comes in as my number 7 sophomore season.
And as much as we talk about the 99 team, to get to become the 99 team, Trajan was there, you know, ahead of that to get the thing going in the right direction.
Exactly. That's the 97 team that we're talking about for Trajan. 99, obviously, he's a senior. All right, number 6 on my list, Trey Jones. First team All-ACC, ACC Defensive Player of the Year, better than 16 points per game, better than 6 assists per game, and a game-winning, incredible performance at UNC. Trey Jones comes in as the 6th best sophomore season all time in a Duke uniform.
If you don't remember it, you know, let me know. I've got the pictures. I was there. It was It was awesome. We're now getting into the territory of like each one of these, Jason. I know that these are left on your list. Each one of these now, when you say like Trey Jones sophomore year, I start going, ooh, yeah. I remember that. That was fun. So one of the things I loved about this exercise is that we get to remember some really special times. And look, Trey Jones wasn't necessarily coming back. The rest of the team that he came in with, that, you know, his freshman year was the Zion Williamson year, when all the rest of his top teammates, Zion, RJ, Cam, all left. Obviously, Trey's older brother had won a national championship in his freshman year, and he left after that. So it was a big deal a few years ago that Trey Jones was returning for a sophomore year, and man, did he show up for that.
Yeah, and the leadership that he provided, you know, I've been talking to so many statistics and, you know, guys making, you know, winning all kinds of awards, making all ACC teams. One of the major reasons Trey Jones comes in so high here, number six on the list of the best sophomore seasons, is because of the leadership that he showed as just a sophomore. Really, really impressive. All right, Sam, you were talking about guys we remember. The guy who comes in at number five, I don't think you remember very well.
For this guy, at least not in a Duke uniform.
Right, exactly. Number five, the fifth best sophomore season, and there are going to be some people who hear this, and they're going to argue with me that he should be higher on the list. Mike Jaminski, the G-man. You ready for the numbers? 20 points per game and 10 rebounds per game. Dude was a 2010 player as a sophomore. Wow. Hit 84% of his free throws, 54% of his field goals. Clearly, first team all ACC. Made the all-tournament team in the NCAA tournament, and part of that was Duke making it all the way to the national title game where they lost to Kentucky. Mike Jaminski, an incredible, incredible sophomore year.
And a guy that we've talked about a number of times on this show, but every time that we get Kenny Dennard on here to yuck it up about his time at Duke, you know, he talks very glowingly of the role that Mike Jaminski played. There were a lot of studs on that 1978 you know, national runner-up team, but Jaminski was clearly the star. He's the one from that team whose number is in the rafters. And I think a lot of people my age only know Mike Jaminski as being a, you know, curmudgeon on the ACC network. But I've seen the footage. It's grainy. The lights are all streaked across the screen. But I could tell that Mike Jaminski was a good basketball player.
I know him. I mean, my first, you know, instinct of knowing him was when he was still playing in the NBA, I believe, when he was with the Hornets, the original Charlotte Hornets. But yeah, I think when you average 20 and 10 in this economy, that's doing really good.
There we go. I like in this economy. All right. Number four on the list of the best sophomore seasons, Grayson Allen. Wow. People remember the enduring image of Grayson Allen is from that freshman year, from the NCAA tournament, from the Final Four, where he dove on the floor. But he hadn't been a huge impact player as a freshman. And as a sophomore, he was unbelievable. 21.6 points per game. You know, better than 41% of his three-point field goals, almost 42% on his threes, all ACC first team. You know, knocking on the door, all these All-American teams and the such. Grayson Allen, a truly incredible sophomore year, arguably the best year of his entire career.
I would argue that our endearing image, or at least our enduring image of him from his freshman year, was during the Final Four. But that kind of gave like, hey, this guy, you know, might be able to do something. And then he took that whatever glimpse that he had in the NCAA tournament, especially in the Final Four, and took it to another level his sophomore year, and it made people go,
dude,
oh,
he took it up two or three levels.
Yeah. He's like, this Grayson Allen guy is pretty good. Oh no. Duke's got another one. Like of a, you know, especially again, Jason, you talked about Trey Jones being on a team where all his boys left him after 1 year to go to the NBA. Same thing with Grayson Allen. All his boys left him to go to the NBA after winning a national championship. And he came back and said, okay, it's my team now. I'm gonna take over. It was terrific.
Grayson Allen's career at Duke is fascinating to me because he has the freshman year where he really only explodes for like three games. And then at the end of that season, I remember during that offseason, because we were doing the show then, our first season was during that 2015 title run. And in the offseason, there was all this talk about, oh, Grayson Allen's going to be the star of the team next year. And I remember saying, like, I hope that happens. But like, we only really saw that for like, you know, 60 minutes this year, or 80 minutes of the season. I hope he comes back and is amazing, but it's not guaranteed. And then he completely blew away my expectations. And then unfortunately, he wasn't able to follow it up in either his junior or his senior years as well as he did in his sophomore year. Jason, you said it's probably his best season. His sophomore year is definitely his best season at Duke.
Yeah, you're
it's
right.
Not the
you're
one.
Right.
It's not the one that produced the most important highlights for Duke history's sake, but look at the numbers and watch the highlights. His sophomore year was the best. It also probably portended, the role he would play in the NBA, because the other amazing thing about Grayson Allen is that he stuck around for 4 years at Duke. He played with a number of different stars. He had to play a lot of roles. And in the NBA, he has managed to, I think, get better every season, to the point where now he's playing on a competitive Milwaukee team and starting almost every game. So, so cool to see the progression for Grayson Allen. And I do wonder sometimes, how the coaching staff talks about him, because he's such a great example of you come back, you learn new things every year, you adapt to playing with different teammates, and lo and behold, you can be 6'4" and carve out a pretty awesome spot for yourself in the league.
All right, we're down to the final three. And I think if you asked other people to put together this list, I'm not sure, without looking at the stats and really thinking about it, that people would go to the guy I've got at number three this high in the list. But when I talk to you about him, you're going to go, yeah, you know what? That's right. Luke Kennard. Luke Kennard's sophomore year was ridiculous. Almost 20 points per game, 19.5 points per game. Hits almost 44% of his threes. And remember, dude only hit 32% from three-point range as a freshman and comes back, hits 43.8% from three as a sophomore. 86% of his free throws, first team All-ACC, second team All-American, ACC tournament MVP. A lot of people forget about that. Look, folks look back on that team and they go, Jason Tatum. I'm sorry. As good as Jason Tatum is in the NBA, and he showed some great glimpses of it in college, for his 1 year, Luke Kennard was the best player in that team, no question about it, and absolutely deserves being in this spot as the third best sophomore season in Duke history.
When we are looking ahead to this season and at Kyle Filipowski, I would like to think about Luke Kennard's development, because you mentioned, Jason, the big thing about Luke Kennard's sophomore year is that he went from a below average three-point shooter to a great three-point shooter in one offseason. And it was like he came back and immediately was this good. Kyle Filipowski should be watching the tape on that, because if there was one thing that we said throughout the year about Filipowski, tons of great development from him, great rebounder, great scorer, et cetera, et cetera. But looking ahead to this coming year, the one thing that he really clearly needs to improve on is the three-point shooting. So I hope he gets whatever the Luke Kennard magic was, to turn into a great three-point shooter as a sophomore, which I think we all think he is capable of.
Look, his shot was all water through the entire, from anywhere, right? It was amazing, because, and the funny thing is, guys, we talked about him as just a prolific scorer, right? Like, he could score in any kind of way. It's not like he was yamming over people, but he could dunk, he could lay it in, he could drive the lane, he can shoot from the perimeter, he could shoot from 3-point, he could shoot when he got off the bus, he could shoot from the free throw line, and he was just, his shot was just wet from all those places. It was so fun to watch him play, because whenever he got the ball, whether it was with 19:32 left on the clock in the first half or with 2 seconds left in the game, you knew that if that man was shooting the ball, it was going in. And it just felt that it was great to see a guy who made such an improvement, but also was just, he was the guy who was like, look, I'll take the ball. I want the ball in my hand, so let's go. And it was fun to watch him. That's a great pick for number three.
Yeah. And somewhat like Grayson Allen, the guy that we had at number four, both Luke Kennard and Grayson Allen progressed so much from their freshman to sophomore season. They are probably the two textbook examples of guys who showed glimpses as freshmen and then suddenly became absolute ridiculous studs as sophomores. All right, there are two more guys left in the list, and these are the only two sophomores in Duke history to win National Player of the Year. The guy who comes in at number two is Jay Will. 21.6 points per game, better than 6 assists per game, hit almost 43% of his three-pointers. The National Association of Basketball Coaches said he was the player of the year. He won a ring with the 2001 Duke Blue Devils. Jay Will had the second best sophomore season of anyone in a Duke uniform. Donald, talk about it first, because you know this team as well as anybody.
Yeah. I think, Jason, of your list, and I know we haven't talked about the number one guy, but I think people know who it's going to be. So I'm going to say that the only one on your list to win a national championship in his sophomore year with some of these numbers. So look, JJ was a star among stars on that team. It's incredible on a team that had seniors, juniors, sophomores, and freshmen contributing. He was one of the stars of them all. And it's hard to look back on that and not go like, yo, how is he not number one? I understand who you're going to say number one is, but for me, like, man, that J Will season was so special. And for him to follow it up with probably even a better season the year after is just simply incredible. I mean, how many national players of the year come back to school? That's what this man did.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a very special year.
And this was during the transition from guys definitely stay 4 years in college to, I guess, guys kind of leave early now. The guy we're going to talk about, number one, left after this great sophomore year, but Jay Williams coming back for his junior year was a big deal, because he was such a star as a sophomore in college and was unstoppable in so many of those games down the stretch on the way to the championship.
All right, you guys have teed it up for me. Here's the number one player, and I'll be honest, when I went, you know, started this list, I went ahead and filled this guy's name in as the number one sophomore season, and really, as I went back and looked at every single year, there was no one who even made me think twice about putting this guy number one. It is, of course, Elton Brand, who, you know, I mentioned that Jay Will won the National Association of Basketball Coaches, the NABC Player of the Year. Elton Brand won all the Player of the Year awards as a sophomore, averaged better than 17.7 points per game. And I think that if he'd wanted to in 1999, Elton Brand could have easily averaged 20, 25. You name the number, he could have averaged it. They just didn't need him to, because they were beating the ever-loving, you know what, out of everyone. The 99 team just beat everyone like a tired, worn-out mule. So almost 18 points per game, almost 10 rebounds per game, 2.2 blocks per game. He hit 62% of his field goals. It's just an unreal season from Elton Brand. I recall thinking throughout that entire year that, like I was just saying, he could do whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted. And when you got him the ball in the post, forget about it. Game over. It didn't matter who was guarding him. It didn't matter the circumstance. Dude was probably going to yam on someone and make them look silly. Just truly amazing.
I'm just going to say this quite plainly. That man was very good that year. He was. Oh boy, I don't want to curse. That's how good he was. He was pretty dang special that year. And I think the only thing that I was like, man, I wish it would have been capped by him getting a ring in that, because it was definitely earned. And we've talked about the 99 team, more times than we can imagine. But it's because of how good they were. And again, on a team of stars, he was the star. He was the man in all of college. And probably, like, if you think about that particular season, Elton Brand might be one of the most feared players in an individual season in college basketball history. That particular year, where if he stepped on the court, everybody knew the game was over, because he was going to just put on a show.
Look, Christian Laettner was a tough dude who played at Duke, but we had not seen a guy who was tough the way that Elton Brand was tough until he came along.
And that is all that needs to be said about that. it was a joy. It was such a joy watching that 1999 team and watching the man in the middle, just the way he absolutely dominated. It was a ton of fun. Donald, you want last word on the top sophomores?
Yeah. So Jason, first of all, thank you for putting together this list. This is a very good list and took a lot of time to go through this. Having said that, Jason, I am going to insert somebody into the top 10, because I think that this person is one that you overlooked. And we've talked about this before. That man, you talked about actually earlier in relation to someone else, but that man is Shane Battier. Shane Battier, I just want to go through his stats from that year. 9.1 points per game, 4.9 rebounds per game. You're like, okay, we're not 1.5 assists per game, 1.8 steals per game, 1.2 blocks per game, 41.5% from three. Second team all ACC, second team all ACC tournament, top 10 in the conference in steals and blocks. Only sophomore to do that, at least to that point, other than Elton Brand. And also, Jason, he was the National Defensive Player of the Year, only the third sophomore in the history of college basketball to do that. No one on this list is a National Defensive Player of the Year. We're not talking about any of these guys from a defensive standpoint. We've been talking about all offense. But I say this, he had one of the best seasons as a sophomore, and people don't recognize it because he was overshadowed on that team by just about everybody else, right? You know, three guys went pro. He had Trajan Langdon on that team, also graduated. And Shane Battier, who turned out to be one of the greatest players in Duke basketball history, just had this coming out year. But having a National Defensive Player in a year, I actually, honestly, because of all of this, all this kind of stats that he did, I would slot him in at like number five, right? Like just maybe right. You can argue with me about him or Mike Jaminski at five, but I'd slot him in and slot everybody down on your list. The reason why I add him, though, is because I think there's one guy on this team that if he has a great offseason and can come back stronger, I think that stat line can apply to one person and maybe even a couple more points here or there, or blocks, whatever. Mark Mitchell. I don't want to put a lot of like pressure on the dude, but like if he improves offensively and defensively, we're talking about, you know, like a Kawhi Leonard type of player where he can, you know, kind of do whatever you need to do to get the job done, three pointers, dunks, whatever. But defensively, I think he could be looked at as a National Defensive Player of the Year candidate because I thought he had a great year defensively as a freshman. He was, we talked about the fact that he was able to do so much while not fouling his opponent. And I think if that continues, he's only going to get stronger and better from here. And so, I mean, look, if Mark Mitchell can kind of replicate that stat line with all those things, filling up the stat sheet in so many areas, then, yo, he's going to be a great player. We are going to be a great team. And I think that's why Shane Battier would be on my list.
I think to wrap up here, I wanted to echo Donald's point about how you can look at a lot of these examples and see the way that Mitchell, Filipowski, and Tyrese Proctor are all kind of primed to have not exactly the same seasons as the guys we've talked about, but big leaps ahead for them. You know, Mitchell showed the flashes all year, and we know that he was great on defense. Filipowski, we've talked about sort of where the only holes are in his game, at least at the college level. And Proctor, every month this past season seemed to be getting better, seemed to be getting more comfortable with the college game. So I hope that if we were to redo this list in a year, that we'll see a couple of those guys on it.
Yeah, amen. I mean, the one of the reasons I did this was I was like, yeah, it'd be really interesting to see if we get one of these guys who busts into the top 10. It'd be very exciting because all the guys in the top 10 and the couple others that I mentioned after, you know, who just barely missed my top 10 had really special sophomore years. That's what we're expecting from one, two, maybe all three of the big sophomores coming on for Duke next season. Hey, folks, you may think my list, you know, Donald inserted Shane Battier in there at number five. You may think my list is complete bunk. You may think I'm crazy. I would love to hear from you about that. Write to us at dbrpodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe and like the Duke Basketball Roundup. That way you can get this podcast every time, the moment it hits your feed. For Donald and Sam, I'm Jason. Thanks so much for joining us. We're going to have some NBA draft preview stuff coming up for you very, very soon. But until then, here's the Duke Band to play us out and take us home.